start age 14 is when I started to go to institutions. I was introduced to AA at that age. I was not in the least bit interested in AA. Started getting in trouble, you know, early on, and that carried through my adulthood until I got sober. It's, you know, the classic case of feeling uncomfortable in my own skin, dying for you to like me, all that good stuff that comes with alcoholism, and anytime I touched a substance, I couldn't stop, unless I was intervened upon. And so, with that, I, you know, I went to prison a couple times, and the end of 2011, I got out of prison. In 2012, I moved to Ocala. I had a person up here who I knew who was in recovery. And by this time, I had, I'd been to treatment 12 times. I had 60, 30, 90 days of sobriety at different times. I could recite some stuff out of the big book. You know, when I was sober, I was, best guy in AA, but I just did not know how to behave, man. I just didn't know how to act. Really was always faking it, watching other people and wanting what they had, and was never willing to do any work for it. So I moved up here. I turned 36, I went to the centers. I grabbed a hold of this thing, I got a sponsor. I always share this in every meeting, you'll hear me say it, but I always say thank God for the guys that made AA look attractive, the relationship with Gal look attractive, and made AA look cool, because without them, I wouldn't be sitting with them. And the women, for that matter. I went to treatment. I stayed sober about a year and a half. I became the cool guy at the halfway house. You know, I was dating girls. I was doing all the stuff they tell you not to do in AA. And eventually, I used again after about a year and a half, and, which takes me to 5/24/2015. You know, by that time, I had read this book 1,000 times. Say have been around a long time. Well, I've heard, you know, I call them my heroes in AA, but people who've been around these rooms a long time and say, you know, you read the book for the rest of your life, and every time you read it, it will change, or it'll mean something different to you. And, I never got that until I was sober this time. And, you know, I really, really had to just come to the fact that I could not use any substance or alcohol successfully in the rest of my life. And once I did that, I really had to get to work. And, you know, and I've read these things a million times, and there's this one line, right? And it's in the story, in acceptance, right? And I don't want to share this too. So, you know, I've been around AA, I've been sober 10 years, right? The first 5 or 6 years of my recovery, I went to a mental treatment every 6 months. I got sober with a bunch of really cool guys who were doing this stuff every day. I was a part of a lot of special stuff. You know, we had to hold meetings. I worked in a gym for 4 years, and you know, the owner of that gym, who's now our mayor, who's in recovery, we used to have meetings there. It was just, I was engulfed, and it was what I needed. It was God knew what I needed. And so it was like, you know, I didn't see it then, but God strategically placed all these things in my life because he knew that that's what it was going to take for me to get, you know, get sober, get a hold of myself and find out who Johnny Eaton is, you know, because I didn't know who he was at 38 years old. And I'm 49 now, I'm still figuring. So there's this one line, you know, it's, he says, it's so simple, and I've read it a million times, and it's the doctor, and he's talking about how he was, you know, he's we- weaning himself off of alcohol and pills. And he says, I had the appropriate symptoms such as cough, pain, anxiety, insomnia, muscle spasm, or upset stomach. He would just diagnose himself and dose himself with whatever, and that was me, you know. And the line that screamed to me this time when I got in recovery was, he said, today I feel I have used up my right to chemicals. And that really kind of like changed my whole perspective on really, really wanting to get sober and stay sober and be a part of something else, you know. And the other part was acceptance, right? I was always the guy that's like, oh my God, they're going to talk about page 417 again. Right? I was that guy. I really, it truly was. And maybe I am still on some days, right? But I have, Alcoholics Anonymous has given me this life really, truly beyond anything I could have ever even thought, you know. A relationship with God, first and foremost. The ability to be able to have conversations with other people, which I wore so many masks for so long, that it just crippled me from being able to communicate with anybody. It's the 8-year-old boy. I was an 8-year-old boy, scared to death, operating in a world as an adult, and I had no clue how to live as an adult, right? So I would put this face on that would scare people because I didn't want them to know that I was scared to death, right? And I operated like that from 14 to 38. Again, God strategically placed people in my life that looked at me and said, dude, you are so full of shit, you're fucking scared to death, and you better start to take those masks off. You have no clue how to live when you're 38 years old. And I just lost it because I was like, in my mind, I'm like, I didn't know that. Blatantly obvious at 38 years old. That's when I became willing to really kind of try to dig into this stuff, man. And a lot of this, even 10 years in, is constantly unlearning, right? I get to learn. I do, daily. I have to remain teachable, but I am constantly unlearning. And it's more of the process nowadays for me than any other. I've gotten to do a lot of really cool stuff and make a lot of really magical relationships that I thought were out of touch for a person like me. You know, fell in like 7 or 8 times over. So, you know, in the beginning I put myself in this box that was going to be like, what am I going to do with my life? What options do I have? I've been to prison 3 times. I thought I was doomed for life. Just finally shut up and I listened to some people and I followed some suggestions and my life changed. It started to change really fast and it continues to change to this day, daily. And opportunities show themselves and I've learned a lot over that time, right? And I've gone through these phases where I'm cocky and I've gone through these phases where I'm scared and husband, I have a wife, I have a lot of friends, I work for some pretty important people and they trust me with some really amazing, crazy, important stuff. It still blows my mind. But I wanted to read some of acceptance, what I hated the most, because I've got a lot of stuff going on in my life right now that applies to this. I really need to start digging into this some more for myself because it's all inside. It's all me. And just to share with you guys, I've shared this maybe one time, but in July this year, I was diagnosed with stage 3 heart failure. And I had no clue at all. started doing the adult stuff, going to the doctor. The doctors, you know, I had hepatitis for years, so I got treated for hepatitis. And the doctor, my gastro, said, hey, I want you to get colonoscopy and endo. So I did that. And when he did my endo, and I woke up from it, he told me that he noticed that I had an enlarged heart, and then he wanted me to see a cardiologist. He said, just go for 6 weeks, do the robot, just so we make sure everything's okay. And so I did that, and at the end of the 6 weeks, the lady came in, and this was a lady, like, she was from New York, and we clown, and she's very loud, and she's a cardiologist. On the sixth week, she came in, her energy was totally different, and I knew something was wrong. And her delivery really sucked. And she just said, I'm sorry, honey, but you have stage 3 heart failure. And I have no clue what that looks like, right? I want to know what the answer to that is. So, like, from this stuff that we've learned, I'm like, okay, well, what's the solution? Like, what is the next step? Is it pacemaker? And she said, no, you need a heart transplant. I'm sorry, honey. And that's basically what she left me with. And she said, I'm gonna recommend you to go out to the transplant center. I've been in Orlando. And she made an appointment a month from that day. And she kind of sent me home. And me and my wife were like, what the fuck? Like, my mind was going, am I going to die in 3 days? What is going on? Like, and everything that I had learned here for a split second went totally out the window, and I went in straight panic mode, right? I'm going to leave my wife. How is she going to survive? All of these things, right? And it rocked me. And I shared with friends, and I started getting panic attacks from it. Story, and that was in July, and again, I look back on it now, and I didn't see it then, but God was immediately showed up. So they told me, you know, my job for the last 7 years was flying. I flew around, I picked up different clients, I got them to treatment, I did a lot of that stuff, so I was traveling a lot. And the first thing that the cardiologist said is, you can't fly anymore, right? So then that horrified me, because I'm like, how am I going to make a living? What am I going to do? And so, you know, the people I work for, I told them about that. A couple of friends that I know that were dear friends of mine and my wife's, they worked in the industry. So this was right directly after I got diagnosed. She said, hey, I run an alumni group for this treatment center, and I have a guy who's 2 years post for a heart transplant. He's an Indian guy. No rush, but if you want to talk to him, like, you know, an advocate. And I'm like, fuck that dude. You know, my life's falling apart. Like, fuck that dude. And then I go to a doctor, and we make an appointment back to the doctor, because we want answers. I can't wait a month. He just told me I need a heart transplant. So we go back, and she said, so I asked her, like, am I going to die in 3 months? Like, what is this? She said, no, you're not going to die in 3 months. You need treatment immediately. There are some options, whatever. They started me on a bunch of medication, right? All of which made me drowsy. And then, so, like, a week goes by, and I'm like, I'm scared to death. So I call our friend, and I'm like, hey, what's that guy's number that you were talking about? Who's turned out to be an advocate at the White House or the Capitol Hill level for people who are getting heart transplants. And so she was like, just call him. Like, he wants to do. guy's not an alcoholic, he's never done drugs in his life. And he, me and Lisa have this thing with him, and he's, you know, explaining to us, like, what this looks like. If you're going to be a heart transplant recipient, like, it's very traumatic for her, it's going to be traumatic for me, and how to navigate, and all these things. And then my appointment was, like, September 10th, and this was, like, September 6th, I think, that I was on Zoom with him or whatever. And he said, how would you feel if I flew from San Diego to Orlando to show up for your first appointment? And I was like, that's fucking weird, but okay. He knows what he's talking about. He's been through it. He's navigated it. And that's where, like, if I'm looking for God, he's right there in front of me, right? And as soon as I steer the ship, which I think probably anybody would have done when some news like that. But you know, I was panicked about all this stuff, and as we started to learn about it, it got a little bit better. But for years, I've always been tired. Like, I get out of breath really fast. I thought my testosterone was low. I have to quit the day. You know, all these things, and the doctors. It's never been any of those things. You've had heart failure for years. And I've operated at like at 100 for a long time, feeling shit, you know. And I'm sorry for the person, still working on that. But, you know, just lately, now it's been since diagnosis July, and I, you know, every area of my life has kind of just shown up. People have shown up. My job adjusted things so I can still work and get a paycheck, even if I'm in the hospital. You know, multiple things showed up that I didn't think, you know. It was just the thing, the most, like, let me read this. Of course, we've all heard this. At last, acceptance proves to be the key to my drinking problem, right? After I had been around AA for 7 months, tapering off alcohol and pills to find the program working very well, I was able to say, oh God, is it true that I, of all people, strangers may seem, even though I didn't give my permission, really am an alcoholic of sorts, and it's all right with me. Now, what am I going to do about it? And it's the same thing with, like, this diagnosis. What am I going to do about it? Sit and shit, or am I going to go drink over it? Am I going to drug over it? No, I'm not. I'm scared to death still right now. But over the last, I'd say, 2 or 3 months, I've done a pretty good job of trying to practice this in my life and accept that, like, I feel like, and this may sound selfish, I feel like I have a couple of coins in the spiritual bank. And I feel like God is, it's going to work out exactly as it's supposed to be, right? I don't think that I'm ready to die of a heart attack or have any of those things yet. So if I stick with that, I'm okay. As long as I continue to practice to lean in on God and other people while I'm going through this, everything seems to be okay. I feel okay. But here it is. When I stopped living in the problem and began living in the answer, the problem went away. And that's kind of like what the deal is right now with me. So I've tried to, you know, I'm speaking of my wife too, sorry, babe. But trying to educate myself on this as much as possible. And while being engulfed in it, trying to practice these principles in all my affairs still. Stay connected to God and help other people. It's like the one constant thing in my life has been to be involved with helping other men for the last 10 years. And I'm scared to death to stop doing that because that's been the best part of my life. And I honestly believe, like, I don't even believe I know that So yeah, it's been a lot for me, man. I have been trying to practice this acceptance thing in my life, and you know, God's been really, 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 really good to me, and I try to continue to do His work. And I heard something. What was it? Selective acceptance. And I have that too. I really do. And there's times, I mean, you know, I don't care what anybody says, it's hard to be in a relationship. It's hard. It takes work. It's not hard, but it takes work. And as two people are also learning and unlearning together, and they're married and living and sharing the same space together for years at a time, and experience in life, it's just been overwhelmingly joyous. There's still these things where I am selective when it comes to things. I use a small example. Sometimes she may bring something to my attention, or somebody will bring something to my attention. And at the time, we're just not willing. I don't feel like it's a problem. You know, whatever it is, it may be something that bothers somebody else. It may be something. And it may be something that my wife asked me to do, and I'm like, no, you know, like, I can't, and that's me being selective, like, and I can't do that. I have to try to practice this in everything that I do, you know. So yeah, I guess that I didn't think I was going to make it here. I was kind of discombobulated. I didn't know if it was a 12 and 12, but that's my lead. Hopefully somebody can do something with that. So thank you. Thank you.